Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl Kafer from Deviant Legion. Also, of course, Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff. We're actually very happy to be here today, and we're very, very happy to be with an old friend, confidant, former podcaster, and just all-around great guy, Limes Marshall, otherwise known as Steve Marshall. Limes, always great to have you on, man. Seriously.
Hey, Carl. Nice to be back. Nice to be back.
Absolutely. So there are a number of reasons we're doing this today. And I will have to tell people that you want to stick around because we have an announcement at the end of the show. But first, I thought what we would do is to have people get to know you a little bit better, Limes. And so what I want to do is just start where it all started, back in England, where you were born. And tell us a little bit about you know, your upbringing and that sort of thing, and what brought you to Canada and such. So why don't we start there?
Sure. Yeah, start at the beginning, right? So I'm from a place called Romford, which you may or may not be aware of. It's in Essex, just outside of London. It's famous for John Bull Bitter. And as far as upbringing goes, Carl, you know, pretty happy for the most part, you know, good mom and dad, lovely sister and later brother, you know, and always a big fan of sci-fi and horror, as you very well know. And that quickly transferred into my schoolwork when I started school and quickly became apparent to teachers that this guy's going to be a horror writer when he grows up.
Well, you know, from what I understand in talking to you and that, you went to school and you started out basically as a writer and writing short stories and that when you were a kid and school, and that actually got you started in being published. So tell us a little bit of how that happened.
Well, I was a classic nerd in school. And I'm really embracing that again wholeheartedly these days. But I was the typical nerd that, you know, got the shit kicked out of him and, you know, didn't really play sports, you know, was the guy that liked the horror movies and Star Trek and what have you, which is kind of funny, actually, and kind of paradoxical, because if you've ever spent any time in England, we, you know, we're a very straightforward bunch over there, and we're very, very upfront. And you kind of get this reputation as the guy that knows the great horror movies, and it's kind of like, get the shit beat out of you, and then while you got blood coming out of your nose, it's like, oh, by the way, can you recommend a good horror movie for the weekend? We can say, yeah, watch The Shining. Oh, cheers, mate. Bang, and then the boot goes in again. Right? So, I carried that through. And actually, funny enough, when I left school, the first major job I did was with a publishing house in London. That's what really got me super interested, called Andre Deutsch Limited. And a lot of famous authors and a lot of famous people came out of there. It's really quite interesting. I still go into sort of Indigo now and see sometimes biographies on the shelf and think, oh yeah, I worked with that person. Yeah, I worked with them. You know, we published Salman Rushdie and such. And finally, I guess when I was working there as an office junior, one of the editors got wind through somebody else that I dabble with writing horror on the side. Her name was Sarah, beautiful woman. And she asked, "Could you know what? Get something, get him to bring something in. I'd like to take a peek at it." So I did. Friend of mine, Sally, said, Sarah wants to, in editorial, wants to check out one of your stories. So I was like, frankly, shit in my pants. but I did it. Yeah, right, you know, but I had a massive crush on this editor as well, so that didn't really help matters. But yeah, so I went home and I put together this story that I'd been working on called Storm, and I brought it back in and gave it to her. And then I kind of didn't, you know, just left it at that and thought, okay, you know, let's, you know, she'll say what she'll say or she won't say. And about a few days, maybe a week later, she called me and I got a call to come up into her office. And these were very, very professional, honest, don't blow smoke up your ass people that I was working with at this time. And she said to me, she says, Steve, you know what? I'm going to be flat out honest with you because I think you deserve that much. And I was 17, right? And she said, I thought this was going to be crap. I honestly said, I did this as sort of a, you know, like a bonding courtesy thing with a fellow coworker. But my God, she said, you've got talent, man. You've really, and it was funny because, you know, I respected this editor so much, and I'm looking at her and I'm just like, wow, she's serious. Cause I seen her, I see what she could be like. And that really lit a fire under my nose. And I mumbled me a typewriter, just like Stephen King. And, you know, I would tap away at these things and knock things out. And, you know, and a lot of it was pretty crappy to begin with, I would guess, if I look back now. Harlan Ellison said, sometimes I wish I'd become a doctor instead of a writer, because at least doctors get to bury their mistakes. And that's right? So true, yeah? So I go back and sometimes I'll find things that I wrote from years ago and be like, what the bloody hell was that? But then I did knock out a story once. There was a ghost story in a local newspaper, and I thought, okay, whatever, I'm going to have a ghost story contest. I thought I'm going to have a crack at this. And did, and I pulled in a winner. And they got my face in the paper, and I was interviewed, and it was really a cool experience. Very cool. And honestly, that was where the serious side of the writing started.
Mm-hmm. So you start writing, and you're writing stories, and you're getting things published. Now, tell us how you started this, of course, in England, your home country, but then you transmigrated to Canada. And tell us a little bit about how that happened and what went on from there.
Sure. Okay. So, yeah, that actually, and you know what, that's where things really started to take off, because, you know, listen, I've never run my country down. I love England. I love it to death. But the opportunities in Canada and North America in general, especially for people that do the kind of thing that I do, you know, anything to do with, you know, I mean, you've just got to see yourself, Carl, you know, from the amount of conventions and things that pop up, there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of money. There's a big population. So I had been visiting Canada for a few years. I'd made some friends, Canadian friends in England. And I would work through the winters just doing, you know, Joe jobs and stuff, whatever, that made the money, save up, and then go to Canada for 3 months. And then on one of those trips, I met my first wife, the mother of my two eldest children. And, you know, long-distance relationship, you get to that, you know, and I was very young. I was only 25, right? And, you know, she was 27, I guess. And you get to a point where you're like, okay, you know what? Make or break. Are we going to try this? Or are we going to just, we live too far apart, separate, and just not bother? And we elected to try it. And we got married, and I immigrated to Canada. And ultimately, the marriage, unfortunately, failed. It lasted about 10 years, but we're still terrific friends. She's a great lady. And But while I was doing that, I started really dabbling with magazines, and I was writing columns for a local newspaper for a while there. And I started getting deeper and deeper and deeper into this. And then there was a Halloween writing contest for Writer's Journal magazine. And I thought, hey, I'm gonna have a pop at this, right? And I had a vampire saga that I'd been working on for many, many years. And I was starting to give up on it because we went through that glut where suddenly vampires became overpopular again. And, you know, and everything was about these sprawling sagas with the warring clans and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I just thought, yeah, I've missed the boat here. It's too late. I'm just going to be another one in a sea of Anne Rice wannabes and Poppy Zebright wannabes. So, but what I did survive from that saga was one character that I absolutely fell in love with. This was this vampire named Avalon. And she's been with me for decades, right? And I decided, you know what? She's not going to die along with this saga. And I took her out and wrote this short story called The Isolation Angel, which was basically kind of a semi-origin story, semi-revenge, spit on your grave kind of story. And it struck a chord. And again, I came through with another winner. And it was the only Canadian winner, which I was very proud of, in Writer's Journal. I was in the top three for that. And that was, I'm like, okay, now we're talking, right, okay, all right, so I had a story published in Romford, Essex. Okay, great, lovely. Now I've suddenly hit in North America, and that's where it, and then it went on, and then I wrote a story that was, I went through in my marriage, there were struggles with alcoholism on her side, which I absolutely completely understand at this stage in the game, more than ever. And you know, we have our demons. And I decided to write a story called The 13th Step, which was basically based off of a 12-step program, because I'd been attending AA meetings with her, and I was seeing what was going on. And I guess it was an attempt to find humor in a very dark situation in my life and her life at that time. And I wrote this story, and basically it's about a face-off between an alcoholic human and an egoholic demon that takes place in this motel in the middle of a snowstorm. And I really got into it. And I just, these characters just flowed. The story just flowed. And I sent it off to a competition called for Simulacrum magazine. I don't know. I think they might be defunct now. The editor was a guy by the name of Doyle Elden Wilmoth. And it was funny because I hadn't seen a contest like this before. They actually had a list of the top 100 stories that they'd received. And I can't remember how it went, but you could see where you were getting knocked out of the running, so to speak, out of the judging process. I've never experienced that before. And, you know, I keep going back and checking, and my story was sticking in there. My story was staying in there. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I actually have a fucking shot at this. And this contest was being judged out of Las Vegas. And finally, it came to the announcement of the winners. And, yeah, I can't remember if I was second. I was in the top three again. I hit in the top three. And I got a communique from the editor, and honestly, it was one of the most wonderful things anyone's ever said to me. And it's a completely backhanded comment, compliment, when you see it for what it is. And he said, I'm going to tell you something, Steve. Never in my career would I publish a story about a demon that eats people. I'm looking for so much originality. I would never do that normally. So that should tell you how far out of the park you hit the ball with that story to get me not only to publish it, but to be in amongst the top winners. And I cried. I was like, I couldn't fucking believe it. I was like, wow. And just forged on from there, Carl. And I've been writing ever since.
Well, you know, in preparation of this interview, you sent me that story, and I was incredibly impressed.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, I know you from other things, and I didn't even realize that you had written and stories, and that you had done so well in doing that. And I was taken aback. And it's a really good story, and it's something I would recommend people, you know, checking out. I'm not sure if it's available now through the magazine or whatever the case, but, you know, maybe you ought to get your short stories and self-publish it.
Well, I did have a I'll tell you this. I had a book published in 2010. It was published through a company called Craigley Press, which is run by a lady, Becky Alexander, and her husband, Dave Alexander, two absolutely wonderful, wonderful people. And the 13th Step is published in that. So there may still be copies of the Night Worlds through them or on shelves somewhere if people want to give it a shot and try and pick it up.
Well, what you're going to do is you're going to, at the end of this, you're going to email me, and I'm going to try to find them for you and for our listeners. So just to do that. Now, so you're now in Canada, and you're freelance writing, you're doing whatever work you need to do to support yourself and that. And where I want to go now is, how did Ice Creams start, and how did that all start from the writing and that sort of thing? Because that's where I got to know you.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So Ice Creams actually came to birth in 2018. I was going through, I was going through a really rough patch in my professional life. I was, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I was working for a jumped up little CEO that was just the worst case of little man syndrome. And just, I found myself in a situation where I was asked to do something, and I have to be very careful what I say here legally. I was asked to do something that was unethical and went against the interests of the earning potential of the team that I was coaching. And I could have done that and kept my salary and carried on, or I could stick up for the team and go toe-to-toe with this band. And I took the second option. And it turned ugly from that point on. He was just basically trying to drive me out of the company, and my mental health took a bit of a turn on that. So I started focusing on other things, and I always remembered there was you used to read Starlog, right? You must have read Starlog back in the day.
Oh, absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
And you get those beautiful editorials at the beginning. And there was one in particular where the letter from the editor, and he was talking about people that love sci-fi and fantasy, and you know how we're often, unfortunately, you know, tend to be picked on and misunderstood because we're very different in our way of thinking. And he went on to say, and you know what? You need to celebrate that, because that is what makes you wonderful. And the key to a happy life is finding a way to monetize what you love. So I had been thinking for many years, you know, look, I got to do something. I'm a creative self. That's who I am. And I need to be in and around sci-fi, horror, comic books, all that shit. It's so part of myself, and I actually suppressed it for a long time, and that's a whole another mm-hmm. story, which led to a lot of fucking mental trauma that I'm starting to unravel now. But yeah, so I just one day I thought, you know what? I was thinking about low budget movies and how I love low budget, and we're the same on this. Low budget trumps mm-hmm. big budget every time, because what you can't achieve monetarily, that's where the imagination kicks in. And I was thinking of some of the greatest experiences, you know, Halloween, The Terminator, which to me is, yes, Terminator 2 is a great film. Terminator 1 trumps it all the time, but simply because they made it for 50 cents and a pound of grapes. And mm-hmm. what's up there is so imaginative. So I thought about that, and I'm thinking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre and what Tobey Hooper did there. And I really wanted to create a vehicle that was there to support independent horror and sci-fi and people that were just either just breaking in or needed to had a great voice that needed to be put out to a bigger audience. And that was where I came up with the ice creams idea. And that was the germ of that. It went on to become an idea for an app, which unfortunately, through getting ripped off from an unscrupulous fucking app building company that I won't mention by name, but if you want to check out my LinkedIn, it's easy to figure out who they are. Wankers. ripped me off. Yeah, wankers, complete wankers. And there's articles being written about them, and they're actually being investigated by W5, the CBC show at the moment, which is super cool. I can't wait to see that. But basically, I got ripped off for about 10 grand from them, and that really kind of put the brakes on the app portion of it. But you know what, Carl? Nothing stops us, right? You strive on, and I'm getting to that point now where that portion of Ice Creams is coming to being a reality again, and I can't wait for that.
Well, you know, one of the things that brought us together, of course, was Ice Creams. And then, of course, you came on the Deviant Legion for a while as a podcaster. But what really interests me, there are two things, because both you and I agree on low-budget, micro-budget directors. This is what Deviant Legion has always focused on, and what Incredibly Strange Films, when I was working with David Whittington, specifically worked on too. That, and especially it has to do also with the advent of technology, and you can now make a film with your iPhone and things like that. So there are so many people out there doing stuff, and that's what we're focused on specifically on Deviant Legion are the micro budget directors who have an extreme talent. Now, Ice Creams is a little different because I've actually guested on Ice Creams a couple times, and we've talked to some pretty big people.
We interviewed Stacey Nelkin together. That was wonderful.
Yeah, it was. And I'm not saying to divulge your secrets how to do this, but we did two shows together, one with Dee Wallace and the other one with Stacey Nelkin. And I'm just wondering, how do you get those people? Because I can't.
Hey, and Debbie Rashawn, we interviewed Debbie Rashawn.
Yeah, we did Debbie Rashawn.
And I've maintained contact with Debbie through Instagram, and I honestly love that woman. She is such a warrior. Like, that was a revelation. Her story is a revelation. And every time I get a like or a comment from Debbie, it's like a badge of honor for me. But to answer your question, of how I get the guests that I get, again, you know what? I'll take you back to something my brother said when we were younger. I've always had a gift for words and writing. And every time it seemed I would write to something or a show, I would get mentioned, or it would get through. And I remember one night my brother was laying in bed, and I'd written into some show, romantic, horny son of a bitch, whatever. But I dedicated three songs to a young lady that I had a lust for at the time. And I guess my brother heard it and came downstairs. He said, "That's fucking Steve. That's he wrote and they playing his songs for this woman." And he said to me, "How the hell is it you always seem to be the person that get?" Well, I have a way of wording myself. I have a way of, you know, it's difficult to explain. But but that carried through, and, you know, I decided to start going after guests. And I put myself forward truthfully. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. I want to interview you in such a way that I want to showcase all of, listen, I love you because of The Fog, or I love you because of Escape from New York, or whatever. But I am interviewing you because I am interested in the entirety of your life, and I want to. And the responses have just been incredible. Like, I've really, you know, obviously you get the ones you miss, but then you get the ones you got. Dee Wallace, who, together, right? Stacey mm-hmm. Nelkin, Adrienne Barbeau, who was what? John J. York. Oh, my God. What a sweetheart. Who soap opera fans know him for General Hospital, but horror fans know him for the one season show Werewolf that was on Fox back in 87, 88, I think, when they went on the air. And, oh, my God, he was so did I ever tell you what he sent me, Carl? Did I tell you what he sent me
no.
after the interview? My God.
No.
Want to talk about something that moved me to tears. Okay. So John was on, so I'd reached out to John's agent, and she got back to me, and she said, "Okay, would it be fair to say that you are interested in talking to John because of Werewolf? I see, you know, what I script." And I said, "Yeah, that's absolutely right." So then she came back and said, "Yeah," she said, "he's cool with it. He's on board. We'll figure out the date, and we'll do this." And him and I had a wonderful, wonderful chat, and we talked about, and I think he was a little shocked, in a good way, by how much I adore that show, and because I really do. I think it's one of the best TV horror shows ever, and one of the biggest wasted opportunities. That's the biggest franchise that should have been, in my mind. And we got into talking about it, and I had a discussion with him about, you know, would you be interested in, you know, if they revived it, would you come back? And I threw an idea at him that was, you know, this is how I would do it. And he was like, "Oh my God, that's awesome. Go ahead and write it, please." But anyway, I digress. After the show, I got an email from his agent, and she said, "Could we possibly have your mailing address? John would like to send you something." So I said, "Oh yeah, that's absolutely, that's lovely." And so I gave her the mailing address, and I thought, "Oh, this is wonderful. Maybe he wants to send me like a signed photo or something that I can put up in the office, which is lovely." Oh no, Carl, that's not what he sent. Well, I mean, yes, there was a couple of signed pictures in there, and there was some badges, promotional badges from the show, but then there was this mm-hmm. little box, and it was like a jewelry box, and I'm like, "What is this?" And I opened it up. And inside there was a little note saying, and it was clearly a promotional. I know enough about promotional things that they have their sort of general promotional stuff, and then you have your kind of higher caliber stuff that you send out to potential advertisers, hoping you can kind of get their business, right? You know it, I know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So there was this little jewelry box. I opened it up, and it said inside, "This July on Fox, Werewolf, the series. We're sending this because we think you might need it," something like that, it said. And I opened it up, and I took this thing out. And inside is a silver bullet with, in red, emblazoned on the side, the logo of the show.
Nice.
And And John wrote me a letter with it, a personal letter. And I'm not obviously going to get into it because that's between gentlemen to gentlemen. That's between me and him. But he wrote me a lovely letter. But I will say this, what he said. He explained about the bullet, and he said, there are now only two of these in existence. You have one, and I have the other. And
nice.
I got to tell you, man, the lump in my throat from that is just wow.
Oh, that's amazing. One of the things we do is we want to bring out people behind the scenes. My quick story on that, which I will always talk about, is, and you know this, we've had Stephen Wack on the show numerous times. And
yes.
Stephen is well known for Scanners, starring in that film. But it took me like 2 months or 3 months of saying to him, that's not what we're going to talk about. You're an artist. We're going to talk about your paintings. We're going to talk. And I had to convince him, and he finally came on. It was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
About 2 or 3 years later, Adam, who does our cathode ray mission, is doing a show about Cronenberg and asked me to contact Stephen if he would be on for a couple minutes and talk about Cronenberg. And so I said, listen, I know you don't really like to talk about this, Stephen, but we're doing this show. Adam asked me to do this. You know, if you can, please call in. This is the only time I'm going to ask you to do it. Your decision. I've never heard back from Stephen. Comes the day of the show, he calls in. And he talks about David and he does that. And Adam at the end, well, thank you very, very much for calling in. He says, well, I only called in because Carl told me to.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
You know, and he and I have a really good relationship. And you know, those are the things you really, really cherish.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to go into some of the other things, but the people that we have on, we make them feel at home at Deviant Legion. And so people like Joe Badon and Joe Black and so many people that have come on, Ken Nicolau, Piero was just on. He did, we did a commentary of his film with him for Pride Month, Curse of the Queer Wolf. And you know, you get these relationships, and they're important. And so, you know, with you coming on, it's been very important between the two of us. And now I'm going to just shift a little bit because I know the last year and a half have been a real difficult time for you. And I just want, you know, if you're willing, tell us a little bit about what's happened and that, because I know you've gone through a lot. So I leave it up to you, my friend.
Yeah. Where do you start that? It is a good question. I think, honestly, Carl, because I'm seeing a therapist right now, and I'm really, really trying to unravel a lot of psychological webs in my head, I guess. But the long and the short of it is, I hit the bottle, and I hit the bottle pretty hard. And other substances, unfortunately. And it's, you know, I guess I've been in a 20-year, this is the only way I can explain this, in a 20-year car crash that was about to happen where the car's skidding all over the road and you're trying to get control of it And then suddenly, just boom, you just hit the wall and chaos. And that's pretty much what happened with me. I'm realizing now that I've suppressed a lot of the person that I am over the years. I'm going to say quite seriously, because a lot of this comes back. Everything starts with childhood, right? We all know that. And I struggle with, and I'm going to get to the point that you're asking. I just need to go around the bushes a little bit here. I struggle with the word bullying and the use of the word bullying in schools, because I was subject to bullying. But it's not bullying. It's abuse. It's abuse. And children are not bullied. They are abused. If that happens, if a man walking down the street was punched in the face and kicked in the groin repeatedly and whatever, you wouldn't go to the police and say, oh, that was a victim of bullying. No, that's assault. It's a crime. But in school, it's not. It's bullying. And I unfortunately come from that generation of the, you know, kids, oh, it's kids being kids, you know, and, you know, I also see that, you know, sports is something, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with sports, but a lot of parents live vicariously through their kids, and they really force that, kick that down their throat. And what you're doing is you're breeding a society where the kids themselves think, oh my God, yes, sport is the most important thing in the world. And anything outside of sport is weird and strange. And it needs to change. And that's what happened with me. And I realized I've actually been an alcoholic since I was 14. How strange is that? I've just come to that conclusion that I've been, and the car hit the railings at the beginning of this year in January, to be specific, but I've been an alcoholic since I was 14. I took my first drink at a family party where there was beer out there. You know how you go sneaking beers and stuff, right, you do, the kids do it. And I did that, and I did it. And suddenly I realized, you know what, I don't feel so shitty anymore. I don't feel like I don't fit in. I feel like I'm one of the cool people. I feel like girls are attracted to me now. And that was the fucking start. I know that now because my personality changed from that point on. And I slowly, even though I've written and done things over the years, I've really, really buried the extent of my nerdery, if you like, if that's even a word, to the point where I actually had a joke with my dad recently, because God bless him, I've really re-embraced it in these times of the struggles I've been through. And my dad had said to me once when I was 19, when are you going to stop reading comic books? When are you going to stop? Like, why are you reading Spider-Man at 19? And, you know, there's a disconnect. As much as we love our parents and our parents love us, there's always a bit of a disconnect there. And my dad, I think, finally gets me now at this age. And we had a conversation the other week where I said, hey, Dad, guess what? I'm 52, still reading Spider-Man. And I can tell you what's going on in X-Men right now if you want. And he laughs like, oh, fucking hell, Steve. I love him. But anyway, but to answer your question, yeah, that all came to a head. I crashed quite violently in January, and that skidded into February, and absolutely obliterated my relationship that I was in. And unfortunately, now my children, young children from that relationship, have to deal with the loose ends of that. But I just had one terrible night where I just went out, and it was a February night. It was horrible. And I just became a different person. It's weird. It's what's happened, and I see it now, is the personality that you suppress, they never go away. It's like they splinter and they take on a new form. And whenever I would drink too much, binge drink, that personality would start to, it's like a Jekyll and Hyde thing. Or, yeah. You know, Banner and Hulk, whatever, right? And this thing would come out and start, and it's horrible. And I hate it. And I was partying for 72 hours straight and no sleep. And just, I just had a fucking revelation. I'm just like, this is, it's destroying me. It's destroying the people around me. It's destroying everything I love. And it's got to stop. And I got up and went to my first AA meeting and got through the door. And I was terribly scared when I went in there, as you are. And I nearly turned around and walked back out. And then this fella came up to me, Mac, who's now my sponsor, and said, he said, hey, well, you're new here. You know, and I'm, and I just looked at him and I just burst into tears. I was like, yeah, I can't do this. I can't do this right now. I can't do this. I'm going to go. I'll come back another day. And he stopped me. He didn't stop me like physically, but he said, listen, I hope you won't go. I hope you won't. Why don't you go to the washroom and take a minute and breathe and just come in and sit at the back and listen. And I did. And suddenly you start to realize what a disease and what a poison drink is to the wrong people. And mm-hmm. how the nicest, most normal people you'd never believe have changed under the influence. And I... There's a bittersweet part to this story, so I'm going to try not to get choked up, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. So I went in and I started my journey of sobriety there. And the one person that, you know, I'm not going to say that there's been multiple great people that have been in my corner and understood, you know, the sickness and stood by me and my, God bless her, my sister, you know, it's funny. She was always my protector growing up. She's always the one that was looking out for me. And she's like, we're going to do this together. Because I know who you are and I know who you really are. And I'm never going to desert you. I'm never going to give up on you. And we're going to, and I just like, Lisa, I don't know where to start here. Just like start at the beginning. And she was, oh, Carl, she was such a, a treasure.
Support and treasure.
Yeah. Because, you know, I was having days there where I couldn't even look myself straight in the mirror, because when you look at yourself, you've got to face yourself, and right, and that's
mm-hmm.
and she was like this wonderful alternate mirror, sparkling mirror, because I would talk to her and we talked every day, and I'd say, Lisa, I got to tell you, there was this time I did this and I did that, and I woke up one day and I was on a floor and I didn't know where I was, and you know, and I'd get upset, and she'd say, you know what, I get it, but do you remember this? And it was like she'd open the drawer and bring out some memory that I'd forgotten, and that was the real person. And she's like, this is you. That's not. This is you. And you've got sucked into this vortex of mental chaos where you can't ascertain what is what anymore. And I'm telling you, you, for every bad thing you've done, you did this, you did that, you did this other thing. And she was just wonderful. and she was just there, and we communicated every day. And you know, Carl, one of the last conversations we had, because there is an unfortunate end to this story that I know that you're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
One of the last conversations we had, I was just getting into my third month of sobriety, and we would share the day I got my chip. Every Sunday we would share. And one of the conversations, she would say, listen, you know what? On the last conversation, she said, listen, I know you hold yourself responsible for this and for that, and you've done this and you've done that. And she said, and I'm not negating those things. And I'm not saying that you don't carry accountability, and I'm being accountable, Carl. I'm on a fucking radio show being accountable right now. But she said to me, you know, and I'm not shedding, she said, and I'm not shedding guilt on anyone else. I'm not attacking anyone. But Steve, as your sister who knows you, how the fuck could people not see you screaming out for help for so many years? How could did nobody see that there was something deeper going on? And we were going to talk about my third, and she reiterated that she'd never give up on me and she'd always be there. But unfortunately, next morning I got a call from my brother, and she passed away from a brain aneurysm suddenly.
Jesus Christ.
And, it shook us all, the whole family. It's just her brother, my mom and dad, her poor husband. Like, just the loss is, and you know, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow, of all the people that had to leave the earth, you know, of some of the shit that I've done to my body, that I shouldn't have probably woke up the next morning alive. And that's the soul that goes.
I'm going to interrupt here for a moment and just tell you a couple things on my end, because you and I share a lot of this. Okay. So as we're going through this story, you know, I was bullied. I had a physical problem, which isn't really noticeable, but it's noticeable enough. You know, I got beat the fuck up and all that. And you go through this, and what you do is you find people, and not just your family, but everybody. And I've had that. I also ran into a situation 3 years ago where I became homeless. And I had an old friend of mine open up his place and get me back on track. So, you know, these are blessings. These are things that God gives us to get through these difficult times. Now, of course, your sister, my sister also passed away 4 years ago, actually, 3 to 4 years ago.
I'm sorry.
And, well, it happens. It happened. She passed at 65, the age that I am now. So, you know, I think about my, you know, mortality a lot. But the thing about it is, as we go through, we find, you know, we find things and we find people that help us. And to me, it's not, it's from people that really know us and care about us, or it might be just somebody passing by that you become close to. But these are gifts from God, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, I'm a church organist. I'm quite religious, and what interests me in some of our previous conversations before this interview
was that it seems like you're you've become more aware of those things. And I'm wondering if that's also because of AA, because, of course, the 12-step system is rooted in a belief system. And that, and I'm just wondering about your spirituality and how that has developed over this period of not only reckoning, but recognizing, is the way that I like to put it. And understanding, having a more spiritual look at things as opposed to a mortal sense of it. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So my spirituality is increasing by the day, and it's gone off the chart. Now, I want to be clear. You mentioned Jelvedon earlier. Wonderful gentleman there. Wonderful mutual friend that we share. And Joe was and I know he'd be fine when he's saying this because he said it on the air many times, was very heavily involved with the church and stepped away because he just got fed up with religion. Because religion and spirituality, and I've had this argument so many times, and I don't bother with an argument anymore because if someone can't see what I'm saying.
I'm going to interrupt here. I'm going to interrupt here for a moment. And this is something that I've said 100 times. That spirituality is personal. Religion is crowd control.
Thank you. That's exactly where I was going. And I've had this discussion. And if people can't see that anymore, I don't even bother. I don't bother. Bono stood on stage at a concert once and said, people giving giving 10% of their wages to the church and this, that, and the other. He said, you know what? The God I believe in isn't short of cash, mister. And I believe that, right? And I'm not saying that there's not room for charity and things. Yeah, you said crowd control. That is the big difference for me. Religion is control of the masses by means of fear. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in punishing fire pits and torment and torture. And I just believe in something more. I do believe that there are forces that are above us. And if we sit in silence and we open our heart and we open our mind and we meditate and we cut out the static, and we start to connect mm-hmm. with what we believe in. A common misconception people make about AA. Oh, I don't like AA because it's religious. Well, actually, no, you're completely wrong. No, when we speak of God in meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous, you speak of my God as I know him or her. And what that means is, it doesn't matter what your faith is, the own or what your belief system is, or whether you believe that God resides in a parked car outside your house. You believe whatever your higher power is that you can talk to and you can draw strength from. And I do talk on a daily basis. Carl, you know what? I'm not crackers. I talk to my God as I know him on a daily basis. I've had some very angry words about my sister because I think, you know what, if, also, two things I believe: if there is a God, I don't need a go-between to speak. I don't need to be mm-hmm. in a church. I don't need a priest. I can talk to him myself or her myself. They'll listen to me. And they're also, if they're that powerful, they're big enough and ugly enough to take their lumps. So I have had conversations where I said, you know, why did you take my sister? Why did you take this wonderful soul? And I feel like there's something listening and I'm getting responses, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
No, it absolutely does. I want to interject here. When I was in New York in the 80s, I ended up running from a rabbi, and I was in the garage apartment, and I would see him come out, and I would see him pace and sort of just like look up and like go, bah. So I asked him about it. He says, this is a very much a Jewish tradition. We talk to God and we complain and we vex and we bitch at him. And he says, there's a lot of psychological good that comes out of that, but also what it does is it relieves so much frustration. And that by opening up, we perceive things differently and on a more universal scale. And it makes exact sense to me. So in the mornings, I get up. What do? I pace and I say, God, come here. We need to talk. I'm not exactly really happy here. No, you need to listen to this shit, okay? And it works.
It does work.
I'm not saying it'll work for everyone. But it works for me, and it seems like you have the same situation there.
Do you remember, you know what? Yeah, I want to take this. I want to stick on this subject for a minute because this is really cool. Do you ever, and I'm going to take it to sci-fi for a second. Do you remember a show that, obviously, we know J. Michael Straczynski from Babylon 5, but he did another short-lived show called Jeremiah with Luke Perry. Did you see that?
Oh, are you kidding? I fucking love that show.
Right. Terrific, wasn't it?
Love that show.
And there was an episode in particular where he got teamed up with Jason Priestley. Again, from Beverly Hills 90210, they brought Jason Priestley on as the nemesis for the episode. And he would go around to people and say to them, before he killed them, or did he kill, if he killed them, he would say to them, do you believe in the efficacy of prayer? And the person would say, yes, I do believe in the efficacy of prayer. Please spare me. And he would put his hand on their head and say, and you are spared, and walk on. And then suddenly you get to another one and he'd say, do you believe in the efficacy of prayer? And they might say it, and suddenly he pulls a gun out and shoots them through the head and turns around to Luke Perry and says, I'm sorry, God doesn't save everyone. But my point is, I love that. That had such an impact on me, that episode. And for years, I've been saying that to people. Do you believe in the efficacy of prayer? Because I thought it was a funny line. But you want to know something? At 52 years old, I suddenly, that's it. He asked someone, do you believe in the efficacy of prayer? And the person just looked at him, and he just goes, like, annoyed. And he's like, that it works. And the guy's like, okay. Like, if I guess you didn't know what efficacy meant. But I, at 52 years old, I do believe in the efficacy of prayer, because I realize now that what you're doing when you are praying is you are reprogramming you're programming your spirit and your mind. And these words are hitting you on a deep, deep level that is reprogramming the way you, like, I can tell you now, Carl, I react or don't react to things in a different way in the space of the last 4 months than the person that existed back in, say, January. Like, I literally do not react. I'm very much more of the Bruce Lee school of thought. Look at things logically and don't have an emotional reaction. Just let it pass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when you're praying, you are speaking to your higher power and you're speaking to your own heart and mind and you're reprogramming yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I probably sound like a crackpot now, right? I sound like a crackpot.
Not at all. Not at all. I've studied... You know, in college, I was a philosophy minor. I have a master's in church music and a minor in theology. It's an amazing thing when you look inward and you look through a prism of kindness. I'm one very, very much to specifically go to like the golden rule. Treat others as you would have them treat you. You know, judge not lest ye be judged. And to try to open up, and what that does, it brings an empathy and a reaction where you could actually try to at least understand where the other person is. And if we did that as a race, there wouldn't be any differences. At least I
know we'd hit
that.
Level.
And the other thing I always say is, if somebody is talking about heaven or hell or their religion or whatever, and says, "I know this to be true," run away screaming, because nobody knows shit, and we don't know it until we die. So you know what? I don't want to hear it.
No,
you know, with that's that
true. And you want to know something, Carl? That's one of the reasons why I just don't get involved with organized religion. That's just listen, it may work for some people, but I see a lot of, listen, and I'm going to be flat out, and it's probably going to piss people off, but I see a lot of greed. I see a lot of I'm better than you in attitude with people. And some of the materialism, I'll give you a really funny fucking example, and this will kill you. I know of a spiritual person or persons that were playing with the idea of spending $12,000 on a fucking cat. A cat. If you've got $12,000 to burn, you know how many rescue cats there are that need homes? You know?
Exactly.
Go get a rescue cat. And go give, if you really want to piss away that other $11,999 or whatever the fuck it is, go give it to a charity for children's hospitals or abuse against children. Something I don't congregate. I'll practice on my own time in the sound of silence, and that's how I see it.
You know, we could go on and on about this, and maybe we should on another podcast. I think it would be really interesting, two of us, talk about this. But I do want to move on a little bit. Now, of course, you lost your sister, and that must have had an effect. But from what I see and what we've talked about, it seems to have really motivated you to change. And one of the things I want to say before you start, the whole point of going through something like this is what change does it envelop, and where does it lead you? So now that we're at this point, tell us what's gone on since your sister has passed away.
Oh my God. You're absolutely right. I am indestructible right now. I am in my own mind, I am fucking invincible. I am in complete and utter empire building mode. I want to do all the things that Lisa would have. I wish to God she'd been around to see, you know?
You'll see. Trust me on that.
She'll see. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I'm writing again. And I'm actually, it's funny, it's put me on a course of, I had started writing a story, and obviously I can't go too deep, but called The Girl Who Died. And then, unfortunately, my sister died, and it took on a whole new breath. And now I've suddenly started writing this novel that has now turned into The Boy Who Died, which is about someone that basically commits suicide to go on an odyssey to reconnect with the spirit of that person they lost and try and find them. And it's a supernatural adventure. I think you'll enjoy it. I'm trying to make it in such a way that it's accessible that there's a message in there for older kids, teens. But I'm doing that. I'm writing like crazy. Just came out of a short but wonderful relationship with a woman, ironically named Lisa, who, God bless her, and she's just the fucking best. And we're going to remain friends. You know, unfortunately, we're in different chapters romantically, but by God, just a complete straight shooter that has helped me see that, you know what, you're on the right path. You're an incredible person. You're going to do great things. And I'm doing it. I'm ice creams. You probably know my friend Lawrence sat in San Diego there. I'm sure he's listening. He did our weekly screens there for a while, which we're starting to re-up and re-get going. Lawrence and I are talking on a regular basis. I'm actually going to be flying out to LA later this year so we can kind of have a sit down, because he's got some marvelous ideas of where we can go with ice creams. And the easiest way to say it, Carl, I suddenly realized that one day you're here and the next day you're gone. And you don't know when that day is going to be, right? So I don't have any time to waste now. And I just am enjoying living in the sound of silence. I'm in no rush to get into another long-term relationship. I certainly don't want to live with anyone again for a long fucking time. I'm relearning to love myself and realizing that I'm actually not a bad fucking person. And I'm actually, I would have said before tonight that I had put my demon to rest. But remember that episode of Star Trek where the transporter, it breaks Kirk into the two parts, the bad part and the good part?
Yep.
And the ultimate revelation is, you know, everyone's watching the bad part do its thing and saying, oh, God, that's horrible, Kirk. And, you know, well, we got to make sure that the good Kirk survives. But the ultimate revelation, because they were so brilliant in their writing, is that, no, we need both sides. You need to be at peace with both sides. You need to be, you need your dark as well as your light, especially if you're creative. And I realized that I haven't buried my demon now. I just have it under lock and key and am being a little bit kinder to it and saying, you know what? I have a role in this. I buried you. I let people kill my spirit. I let my spirit be killed. I let myself go off the rails, and the good me is as much responsible as the dark part of me. So let's work together and fuck, Carl. I'm telling you, you wait and see what I accomplish in 2024, my brother. You wait, just you wait. I'm telling you.
Well, I tell you what, I can't wait, because we've been talking and there's a number of things going on now. I talked to you before the show, Vicky, who, by the way, is my ex-wife, and we're very, very close still. But Vicky definitely wants to do a couple shows with you and talk to you about that. You know, we certainly would want you back, if not on a regular basis, on a permanent guest basis, that you're always welcome on if you've got something you want to talk about or that sort of thing. All you have to do is let me on. You know, you're always welcome. And,
well, let's jump back to Vicky for a second. Back to Vicky. I would be honored to come. Anytime Vicky wants me to come on and have a discussion, I love her. I think she is fantastic. I think we really, really do.
You two are so good together. There is no fucking doubt.
Oh, we gel, and it's not that sense of having to agree on everything. There's a mutual respect for the things that we don't agree on, and the things that we both love passionately. So, yeah, so Vicky, if you're listening to this, just say the word. Anytime, buddy, I will love to do a show with you.
Okay. Well, we actually had a show planned, and then your sister passed away. So, we certainly want to get you back, and there's no doubt about that. Now, there's something else that you're planning that I want you to make the announcement, because we are going to do this in tandem. So Deviant Legion is hooking up with Ice Creams, and there's something big that we have to announce, and I'm going to let you announce it, my friend.
Okay, all right. All right. Yeah, and you know what? There's a very specific way I want to announce this, because I want to address anyone that's listening to this show that is a fan of Babylon 5. You are aware that we just suddenly got dropped the surprise of an animated movie that is coming on August the 15th. It is called Babylon 5, The Road Home. All of the surviving cast members are involved, including Patricia Tallman there as Lita Alexander, who I interviewed on Ice Creams. Wonderful, wonderful woman. And this is coming. Something that you need to understand if you are a fan of Babylon 5. This movie needs to be financially successful. This is our Star Trek the motion picture moment. This is that moment where we have an opportunity. Remember, Star Trek had been dead for 10 years or so by the time the motion picture came out. They would try it and fail to get it going multiple times. And finally, this came up, and it was a financial success. And because it was a financial success, we got another movie and another movie. And now suddenly, Star Trek has been alive and well for the last 30-whatever years. So that's what I mean when I say this with Babylon 5. If this movie is a financial success, this may be the start of lots of new Babylon 5 content. So we need to support it. So Ice Creams and Deviant Legion have partnered up. We've a little help from the wonderful, wonderful people at Cinema One. And we will have 10 copies of Babylon 5, The Road Home, the 4K, to give away. The complete rules are on the Ice Creams Facebook page, but I'll tell you right now the two parts to the contest. If you want to enter, this is what you have to do. Number one, come up with a title for a new Babylon 5 TV movie. Remember they did those things? There was about five of them. Come up with a new title. If you were a producer and you had your budget and you could tell whatever story you wanted to tell in the Babylon 5 universe, anywhere, any era, any character, maybe even a character that doesn't even exist yet that you've created, but that is in that universe. Come up with a Babylon 5. The title of the movie is Babylon 5 blank. And there's your, and it's got to make it sizzle. Make it so that if someone sees it in the TV guide, they're like, oh, what's this? I want to know. And the second part is come up with a one or two sentence description, the basis that gives a taste of what the movie's about. You know, two sentences, one sentence, two sentences that would make the reader say, oh, this is what it's called. That sounds exciting. Oh, that's what it's about? Man, because you guys and girls are so fucking creative. We should be inundated with these. And again, go to the Facebook page for Ice Creams. You'll see everything there. You mail your entries, email them to Ice Creamers. I know Carl will put the addresses in after the facts, but Ice Creamers, ISCREEMERZ, @gmail.com. Email us with your details there, your telephone number, your address, And you will be in the running. This will be judged, and the date for being announced, the winners, is on the Facebook page. That's what we're going to be doing, and it's going to be exciting. And I want to reiterate to the people that keep sending me emails saying, "Is this a scam?" Oh, you, Carl, I swear to God, this is happening right now, man. I'll show you some of them. Is this a scam? Are you trying to get our address and name for identity theft? No! Bloody well, no. It's an actual contest. Carl will back me up on this. We are these DVDs.
When we get the movies, we will take pictures of them. We will do all this.
Boom! Yes.
You know, all. There is no doubt. This is real. I can verify this.
Legit.
100%.
So get off your butt, and when you finish listening to this podcast, get the pen and paper out and start thinking Babylon 5. And I'm going to pass it back to you, Carl. I think that was announcement enough. Did I miss anything?
No, you didn't. You and I will have to talk a little bit about who's going to judge, because personally,
yeah,
I think it should be you, Vicky, and maybe me. But I certainly
okay.
You and Vicky.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll
okay,
talk
cool.
to Vic about it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she
okay.
would be up for it too. She's an English major and a published writer also. So yeah, I think those are the two people that need to judge.
And she's a big Babylon 5 fan as well, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so there's no doubt about that. That is a real thing. We're going to be doing that. And I have an idea, okay,
ooh,
which I'm going to – we'll talk afterwards. But I'm thinking the first place person needs to get something else other than a copy of the movie, and I have thoughts. And I will follow that
okay.
up.
All right, let's take that offline then. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, we'll take that offline. But at this now the movie's going to be released the 15th. At that point, when the movie is released and we get the films in and you see the films, we'll then come up with the dates. And how long it's going to be, and we'll talk a little more about this offline, you and I, but we'll get this all settled in. But this is definitely happening. There is no doubt this is happening.
Beautiful.
And we are very, very pleased to partner with Ice Creams. And, you know, you and I, we really are simpatico, my friend. And you know, I know this past year has been really rough on you, and you know that we here at Deviant Legion and myself, particularly, you know, we're in your corner, man, and we always have been, and we always will. And I want you to know that.
I appreciate that, Carl, and I know you are. And you know what? Honestly, yeah. To sum up, 2023, I will remember this as the year that tried to kill me. It is literally tried everything in its arsenal to take me out. And I'm like fucking Jason Bourne right now, man. I'm just, you know what? Bring what you got, because I can take it. And thank you for your support. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, my friend, we will be talking about this more. So before we go, I think you need to do a little self-promotion about Ice Creams and everything you've done. So come on, time to self-promote, Grimes. Come on.
Okay. Please support us. We need you. We need you. More than anything, we just need you to start following our socials. Come on over to the Ice Creams YouTube channel. Ice Creams is spelled I-S-C-R-E-E-M-Z. I know Carl will put a link to the YouTube channel. We've got some wonderful interviews, wonderful short movies, lots of great stuff over there, and it's just going to keep growing, people. You're on the ground floor of something huge. I'm going to tell you that for nothing. You really are. We actually, one of our far and away biggest interview and a wonderful interview we actually had on was Mr. Frank Price, who you may know as the former chairman and CEO of Universal Pictures and Columbia Pictures. This is the man who championed Ghostbusters when everyone in Hollywood thought it was going to be a bomb. How fucking wrong were they? And if you listen, even if you listen to no other interview, listen to this man. We touched the tip of the iceberg of his career, and it is absolutely wonderful. So come over there, and please could you follow us on Instagram as well. And you can find us at Real Ice Creams on Instagram. That's at RealIsCreemz. Please, I get on there every day and talk about all kinds of rubbish with horror and sci-fi. And Debbie Rashawn's there. There's lots of great people there. We need to see you there. Carl, over to you, buddy.
Okay, and just for our American audiences, Z means Z, okay? Just so if you don't understand that, I'm just going to let people know that, okay? you know what I think of you, and you know how much we really appreciate what you do, that you're part of our family too. And I just have to say one other thing. God damn it, come over and at least once a month give us a fucking rant, will you?
I'm ranting on Instagram right now as we speak. It's like, yeah, come over.
Well, fuck you. Do it on our channel too, God damn it.
You got it, buddy. You got it.
Listen, love you dearly. Always will. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, buddy. I love the love. The love is right back at you, my man.
Okay, so as far as what we have planned for the rest of the week, we have nothing. Now, that being said, I will say this. Give me a second here, and let me get therapy. So we are going to have on Sunday, as always, TC is going to be doing Rock This Town Radio. We've been doing a lot of music shows lately, and that is on Sunday, and he's doing a show of The Curse of 27. He's going to be featuring music from those artists who passed away at 27. Also, on Friday, which is the day after tomorrow on the 14th, Catholic Great Mission, Adam Perens will be helming a group of people that will be talking about the BBC show Boys from the Black Stuff. So we'll be doing that. And we have more coming. I can tell you this. Joe Badon has his new movie out now, and we'll be talking to him in early August. We have some other things going on. And of course I'll make sure that Vicky gets in touch with you so we can get a couple of those shows going together also. Okay, and we can get those in before the end of the month. And as I said, my friend, you're always welcome. So if you have any ideas of something you want to do, you're more than welcome, man. And I'm just glad that, you know, with this past year being so difficult for you, that you've gotten through it, gotten stronger, and you've got support all over the place. I want you to know that.
Yes.
All right?
Thanks, man. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And listen, thank you for listening, and really appreciate our listeners and everyone that comes in. Just wait. You're going to hear all about this new contest we have with the B5 movie coming out,
And it's really exciting. And we're very happy to do this, and we're very pleased. So for everyone that's listening, Limes, again, my sincere thanks for coming on. And I think at this point, we're going to say good night. So let us say good night.
Yeah, good night and God bless, everybody. Good night and God bless. Live your best life.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Good night, and don't let the bed bugs bite.